President Trump tweeted this morning that the U.S. has defeated ISIS in Syria. And the White House press secretary confirmed that U.S. troops are beginning to come home from that conflict. So that's the news of the day. We've also been reading that Christmas decorations are going up for the first time in years in a part of Damascus, where the civil war once raged. Reuters reports that a parade is even planned for Christmas Day. So as Christmas approaches, we want to spend a few minutes on the status of Christians in the Middle East. Our next guest doesn't share the sunny outlook we are hearing in today's news. She says Christians have been fleeing their homes and countries in droves. In recent history, in the northern Iraqi city of Mosul, the Islamic State extorted money from Christians and families fled to the safety of an ancient monastery for protection. In Egypt, Coptic Christians have been targeted since the Arab Spring 7 years ago. Tracking it all is Janine DiGiovanni. She's an author and senior fellow at Yale's Jackson Institute for Global Affairs. Her latest article, The Vanishing, The Plight of Christians in an Age of Intolerance, appears in this month's Harper's Magazine. She joins us from New York. Janine, welcome back.
Hi, happy to be with you.
Well, you write that for centuries now, Christians in the Middle East have experienced periods of quiet tolerance interrupted by bursts of brutal persecution. The last wave of this persecution, you write, was World War I, and we're experiencing another one now. Can you just tick through briefly a thumbnail the various places where you're seeing that? Palestinian Christians in the Gaza Strip, or Christians in Syria, where the word, the very word Christian, was said to have been coined for followers of Christ?
Well, the place where I really have spent the most time recently is in Iraq, in northern Iraq, because, of course, this was the region, the Nineveh Plain, where the Islamic State went marauding through, destroying villages, forcing Christians out of their homes, rounding them up, and basically causing absolute mayhem. And this happened when the Islamic State overran Mosul. And it's only really now, with the retaking of Mosul, the liberation of Mosul, that people are beginning to go home and beginning to try to put their lives back together.
The scene you describe, and we know when ISIS came to Iraq after the first invasion by the U.S. and its allies, and the country was destabilized, Saddam Hussein fell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the scenes were horrific in many places. But you describe Christians, you know, packing everything up as they see ISIS fighters come over a hill. You describe ISIS fighters going and writing the word N on the mm-hmm. door of Christians standing for, is it Nazareth?
Nazarene. Mm-hmm. Another word for Christians, which, of course, I mean, the image of that, of writing on doors, you know, this mm-hmm. is where Christians live, conjures up horrific memories and images for people, of course, of the rounding up of European Jews in France, in Germany, in Holland, and in other countries during World War II. You have to also remember Christians as minorities throughout the Middle East, in Libya, in Iraq, in certainly in Syria, were usually in one way or another protected by dictators. In Iraq, by Saddam Hussein. In Syria, by the Assad family.
Because these dictators were secular.
They were secular, and they also wanted to get the Christians' support, which usually had quite a, you know, a hefty political bloc, in exchange for some kind of protection. And what consequently would happen is, when Saddam Hussein fell, Assad has not yet fallen, they then felt incredibly vulnerable, because here they had been, let's take the case of Iraq, of Saddam Hussein backing him for decades, or, you know, if not actively backing him, making a kind of very uneasy compromise in order to keep their existence. I think the main point we have to remember, which is very hard for us to understand because we live in the U.S., which has more or less religious freedom, is that these people feel that they're on the verge of extinction. They genuinely feel that their way of life, their ancient faith, which is so rooted in the land, in that land, in the Nineveh Plain, is where the prophets walked, where the earliest seeds of Christianity were planted. And for people to feel that this very ancient way of life might soon be eradicated is absolutely terrifying for them.
And again, you describe these scenes. You mentioned it's reminiscent of the Holocaust. It is. It also just felt, because of the recent headlines here, as people frantically grabbed things, as they saw ISIS fighters come, it felt like the fires in the Northwest here in the U.S., you know, people fleeing ahead of something that was going to immolate them. Incredibly frightening.
Well, yeah, it was going to immolate them. I mean, they're only leaving behind their homes, their photo albums, their clothes, their possessions, their animals, if their lives are at risk, if they are going to be killed. There were Christians who managed to stay throughout the entire ISIS occupation in Mosul, but most of them took their children, took their grandparents, took whatever they could, their documents, and fled. And they went to Erbil, the capital of Kurdistan, northern Iraq, depending on who you're talking to, what to call it. And literally, by the time I got there, people were sleeping in front of a church. Some of them basically just tried to eke out whatever existence they could until very recently, when the Islamic State fell in Raqqa and in Mosul, and they felt they could go home again.
But you say that the fear of many of the Christians there is that they are not going home, that they are emigrating. And there is a sympathetic Trump administration in the figure of Vice President Mike Pence,
yes,
who is a Christian and has made this one of his missions. While the Trump administration has tried to ban Muslim refugees from coming in, it has been far more welcoming to Christians. But also, you had another concern of them being, what, used by evangelicals?
Yes, exactly. You know, that Vice President Pence and his cohorts see them, because they are Christians, as viable refugees that could come to the U.S., whereas, you know, the Muslims, we don't want them. We've got a travel ban on them. But, you know, these are Iraqi people. These are Syrian people. These are Jordanians. These are Palestinians. Their faith is Christianity, but their cultural identity, in a sense, and their birthplace is these various Middle Eastern countries.
So what do you make of all of this? Yes, Christians from the Middle East can more easily come to the U.S., but the point is they're fleeing their homelands.
I'm very concerned about it. I mean, even during the time of Saddam, right after his fall, I saw a wave of people leaving then who had family either in the U.S. or Canada. I think we need to think of ways to give them incentives to stay, and that is by having businesses, small businesses. The Christians traditionally were traders and businessmen. And if we can give them some sort of initiatives, for instance, there's one NGO that's starting a coding college for young Christians in Karakash, which is one of the main cities that have been destroyed. Things like this, more educational benefits, more ways that they can stay in their country and help it develop, help it grow. You know, we've been told by the Trump administration that they've crushed ISIS and that ISIS is finished, but I don't share that view. I feel that Raqqa has fallen and Mosul has fallen, but the ideology of the Islamic State has not been eradicated. And it appealed to a large number of young men and women who felt alienated from society, who felt that it gave them a place. So I and many others who follow the Middle East are waiting and watching and seeing what will happen. Are they regrouping right now? Are they rebranding? What will be their next steps? Mm-hmm. And I think that Christians will always be a target, and other minorities, of course, yeah, in the Middle East.
Janine DiGiovanni, the author, war correspondent, and senior fellow at Yale's Jackson Institute for Global Affairs. We'll link you to her writing in Harper's at hearnow.org. Janine, thank you.
Thank you very much.